Welcome, everyone. This is episode 35 of DNP Unlocked. And today we are going to talk about union versus non-union nursing jobs. So please join us in the private chat. I'm sorry, in the comment section. All right. And we are going to answer questions today. This is going to be a very interesting topic, Kay, because like for me, myself, I did not work in a union hospital, so I don't know for sure what it feels like, you know, or what the benefits. So I think this will help our audiences to determine if they want to work in a union or non-union nursing hospitals. But first of all, how are you guys doing, Kay? How was your week?
Awesome week. Happy Father's Day to all fathers out there.
Happy Father's Day. How about you, Marvin? How are you? I think Kay is having issues with her audio.
Okay, so far so great. Happy Father's Day to all fathers there. Happy Father's Day to my dad, my brother, and everyone celebrating Father's Day wherever you are in the country or anywhere, any parts of the world. So it's kind of cold here. I woke up early a little bit. I just came from work and then at 4 a.m. and then sleep a little bit. Then I just woke up around 20 minutes ago, and it's kind of cold here in San Francisco.
It's nice. It's warm and sunny here in Houston. I think we are at 80 degrees right now. But let's talk to our audience today. Where are you guys joining us today? Please use the comment section to tell us your location and how are you guys doing. But yes, and today Anna is not going to be able to join us today. She has personal matters to attend to, family matters. And Anna, we miss you. We hope to see you in future shows, or we hope you join us in future shows once all your vacation trips and family events are over. It's summer season, so I know families are busy right now with trips and all that. What are you guys planning for summer?
I'm actually in the lake right now.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's why we hear birds chirping.
Well, good for you, Kay.
Yeah, real nature. I'm in the middle of the woods.
With a right, lake. Right.
No wonder we can hear the birds chirping here and also the water. So I envy you, Kay.
Right, me too. I wish we're live streaming from a lake right now. Anyway, I think let's get down to business. So this is a big talk in the U.S. because we have different laws. All across the nation. It's one country, but many different laws per state. So that's kind of confusing from, say, for example, us coming from Philippines. We have just one law, right? We just follow one rule. But here in the States, you cross a border to another state in the same country and you have a different law, something. So some states are okay with union. Some states like Texas don't necessarily have a rule or a law for union, right? So the question is, why work in a union versus a non-union hospital? So let's first define what a union is. And I think the best person to discuss this today is Marvin, because he works in California and it's a big union, state or pro-union state.
Okay, so before anything else, so I worked in Texas before where there is no union. I don't have any clue or information about how union works or how union protects nurses or other workers. So when I came in California about 6 years ago, so I thought and I realized like, oh, there's a lot of differences between a union hospital and non-union hospital. So by the way, my union is actually, the name is, hopefully it's okay, it's Committee for Recognition of Nursing Achievement, or also known as CRONA. So it is an independent union for RNs that is actually for Stanford and Lucile Packard's health. It's a nonprofit, unincorporated association representing the RNs, advocating for wages, the hours of work, and the working conditions. Now, our union is actually advocating for us nurses and for our nursing profession and for the safety of our patient. Now, as a union member, our union negotiates for collective bargaining agreements, such as your contracts, that governs the working conditions, wages, and benefits of its members. Actually, the members of our union is like 5,000. There are 5,000 nurses across Lucile Packard and the Stanford healthcare system. So the goal or objective of our union is, of course, number one, to maintain the standards in the provision of patient care and work for the improvement of the health standards. The next one is to assess continually for economic and working welfare of our members, our CRANA members, and to improve these areas through collective bargaining. Now, aside from that, they also identify education needs of the members to work appropriate groups to provide programs to ensure the current practice and to provide continuing education for CRANA members concerning their rights stated under the collective bargain. So when I became a CRANA member, I have a lot of like benefits, including especially the hourly rate. They also consider a lot of factors, like for example, the cost of living in an area, reasons they need to assess, like why are their nurses leaving the Bay Area, and at the same time, in order to maintain these nurses. So the union helps identify these needs and at the same time fight for our rights. So that's 2022, our union went on strike because like they actually wanted to make sure that our voices are heard and that our sentiments, especially in the working conditions, are met. So I think we had a strike for about 7 or 8 days, and then they were able to make the settlement between our hospital and also the CRANA members. So we won, and right now we're enjoying the contract, and then we're enjoying patient safety. And then and most importantly, the goal of our union is to protect the public or the recipients of our care, which is to promote higher safety and better quality care. And that's what I think one of the better reasons why I love to be in a union hospital.
All right. Yeah. So one of the biggest healthcare system in New York City is the government hospital called New York City HHC, and they are unionized. So when I first arrived in the United States, they are actually unionized. I saw there's a lot of benefits that were given to us. The salary has a lot of incentives for staying, for retention, mm-hmm. differential pay. We should be really eating lunch. You know, we're not I can speak for myself, right? And the colleagues that I see in front of me, that they really pay attention on our lunches and make sure that we're not really forced to do overtime like that. So there's not a lot much tension when it comes to getting kind of like fair kind of labor practice. So I like that. I enjoyed it. Although I can say the comparisons from where I came from, and that was a big difference. And I said, okay. Also, I've been to other places that are non-union, and I've seen also a lot of differences there. Overall, my experience in both union and non-union hospitals, as long as it's a good hospital, good management, I think it, overall it's good for me. I can say that there are pros and cons, definitely, but I did see more benefits when it comes to advocating for nurses among union hospitals.
All right. So yeah. I did my own research, but I want you guys to agree or not agree or add to it based on union hospital. I have not worked in a union hospital as an employee. I did work in Hawaii. It's a big union state as well. I know the staff are happy with, you know, mm-hmm. their jobs because of the union. But certain things that stood out for me as pros, if you work in a union unionized employee or even unionized state like California, like New York, mm-hmm. first is collective bargaining power, which means yes. as a unified body, as a unified union organization, you have a collective power to go on strike, to negotiate contracts, negotiate salary. Is this correct?
Yes. Like, for example, in 2022, so all the members, I mean, when our contract was expiring, so all the members, like, you need to vote. So there were 95% of all of out of 95,000, I mean, sorry, 5,000 who voted for yes to go to strike. Of course, the union needs to inform the hospital that we're going on strike. And then through our voice, we went on streets, and then we informed the public. We go on social media informing about the things that our demands, our concerns. So I think it's one of the benefits of being a union is to have a unified voice, which you can be heard, and through medias and all channels who are being supported, I mean, supported of nurses. So I think we were able to get our demands.
Right. And the second one, that's good. That's good, Marvin. I like that because, of course, we always advocate for nurses to have this bargaining ability. For, you know, we're not striking because we just want to strike. You know, nurses are naturally caring and empathic, right? That's our training. That's our calling. But also, it's also best for us to stand up, right? To protect our interests as we provide quality patient care, making sure we are working in an environment that allows us to do that, you know? So I think union helps really well with that. And I wish Texas would be a unionized state as well. I can only wish. Number two is job security. Is it true that with union jobs, with the union hospitals, union contracts often include protection against arbitrary dismissal and unfair treatment? Because, you know, like, I work in Texas, guys. Marvin, you've worked there before. Kay, you probably just hear stories. But majority of the states are at will, which means your CNO woke up today and she feels like, I don't want to see Paul today, so let me fire him without reason, right? That's at will. Is this true that with union, your job is more secure in terms of you have to go through a process before they can remove you?
Yes. Yes, it is true, Paul. So as part of the union, they establish process on how nurses face disciplinary charges. You need to have a union rep before any investigation. They have to follow the guidelines, and you need to be informed of these rights before they will fire you. They have to, before they set a meeting, they have to ask you, like, hey, we need a union representative to be present in the meeting before we're going to tell you about this disciplinary actions and all that, so that you'll be protected. And then there's no unlawful termination because you were not represented by a union rep. So the nurses cannot be terminated or disciplined unfairly or inconsistently without the presence of a union rep.
All right. How about you, Kay? Anything to add about the job security part?
Absolutely. So now I'm going to speak on behalf of, like, being a charge nurse in a union hospital before. It's there's pros and cons of it. So there's one employee that came with, I would say, not meeting the expectations of being on a trauma team. So being a trauma charge there before, it was really difficult for us to, like, can we get a, you know, kind of like, how can we make it safer, you know? Primarily because there was an incident that, okay, we need somebody who knows already to jump into trauma, like, highly efficient. Because trauma, we barely really have time to teach. So it came to a point that I got reported for writing somebody up, you know, as discrimination, even though sometimes the person is inefficient and not meeting expectation. It provides job security for them because they know that they're not going to be, you know, putting... So there's pros and cons of, so there's your job security, right? But sometimes it's not being used properly, but sometimes it's being, you know, most of the time should be properly, but sometimes people would use it in a negative way, I think, and because they know that union is there protecting them. But anyway, at the bottom of the point, I had to justify and create many more objective why I don't think this person is fit to work in a trauma shift in an objective way and in a professional way. But some, you know, and I did, it did well end up on our team to be using a different person to switch with that associate, healthcare associate. So yes, she still has a job, but unfortunately it's tougher for us to be able to get the right people on the same team who will be efficient. Yeah. Expectations. So yeah, there's your job security.
There's a caveat. So job security is two-pronged. It's job security for a highly efficient staff member and job security for also non-highly efficient staff member. We're going to talk about challenges later. The third thing that stood out for me, yes, Kay.
Yeah, that you don't really see it on the two sides, but I wasn't I was just, you know, in a charged nurse room, and it's already like, you know, it can be used on both ways, I would say.
Right.
I have to agree with Kay. I have to agree with Kay.
Yeah. Okay, number three that stood out for me, guys, is improved working condition. Unions often push for safe nurse-to-patient ratios, better equipment, and improved workplace safety and standards. Comments?
Yes, that's true. Yes. Coming from a union hospital, we're very, very strict with patient acuity and patient ratio. So I work in the ED, and then at first, when I used to work in a non-unionized facility like in Texas, we don't have any ratio. We just follow 1:4, regardless if your acuity, all of them are acuity level 1, all of them are trauma, or all of them are ICU. They don't matter for as long as you have 4 patients. But here in California or here in my facility, we always follow the acuity. Say, for example, if you have an active trauma, then definitely it's 1:1. Active stroke, 1:1 with what, TNK or TPA involvement. And then ICU, 1:2, and then 1:4 for ED. Now, at any time, when your patient becomes very sick or critical, then the acuity changes, and then your ratio changes. And aside from that, you have to stick with the ratio, or else you can file an ADO, which is against I forget what name of ADO. It's like you need to write it in a paper, and then you have to send it to the union in order for the union to take action for that one, because it's unfair that you will be having a very sick patient and still having 3 other patients. So this is to safeguard your license and to provide best and safe quality care to your patients, depending on the need and depending on the situation. So I have to agree that that is a plus if you are in a union hospital, because they will try to protect your safe practice, your license, and at the same time providing safe and quality care to your patients.
Right. Kay, anything to add?
One of the push right now among all the nurse advocate is safe staffing. As we all know, California is one of the states that has strict laws, and I think Oregon has already passed that as well. So this is one place where there is a very big advantage. We're unionizing, a healthcare system would say safe staffing ratio has always been there's always a pushback between both sides among the nurses and the leadership. But for me, I have seen better care, quality care, especially U.S. in the primary care delivery system, that safe staffing ratio should be in place. When I compare this in the Philippines, where I came from, and all of us came from, primary nursing is often not the mode of delivery, right? We use team nursing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I think this is where the question coming in, like, how come when the nurses from the Philippines come here and was given less patient than in the Philippines, it turned out they're not as efficient or as, or who can handle similar in the Philippines. And I always tell them, you're going to have to understand team nursing in the Philippines uses team nursing model.
Yeah.
In the US, it's primary care delivery. Very big difference, because we advocate for quality care. If you have 1 to 60 patients, that's not going to work out. because primary care is different setup. So that's one, I think that's one blind spot where a lot of our leadership kind of miss, that it's different delivery system out there. You cannot expect the same thing coming here, and you're trying to push what we use in other countries to come here, because again, primary care has a very big significant place when it comes to ratio and safe care delivery. Big impact. So I would definitely advocate for safe staffing ratio. And imagine in the Philippines, I was running in 3 different operating rooms at the same time. I had 13.
That's wild. Yeah.
My own experience was having 13 patients in the recovery room by myself. And we used manual blood pressure monitoring. Yeah. My hands are very painful already when it comes to squeezing that blood pressure up. And we don't even have those thermometers that are
digital.
We use a very mercurial thermometer. And you have 14 patients to take care of recovery room post-op. It's very unsafe. And I every single time that I was working in that unit, I would just pray that they will live.
I hope you were able to wipe the thermometer in between patients' skin.
In patients, and the temperature and the vital signs has to be every 5 minutes in recovery room.
Yeah.
So there's no way to deliver safe care at all. There's no limit on this. It's absolutely detrimental and unsafe.
Yeah.
Right. Well, in my experience here in Texas, for example, we are not unionized, but we do have protected ratios. It's not a federal rule. It's not a state rule. The Board of Nursing did not mandate any ratio, but at the very least, there is an acceptable ethical level of numbers. As far as ER is involved, this had always been my case in the ER here in Texas. I've worked in many hospitals, but we never get more than 4 patients in the ER. Now, it's not union. We don't have union protecting that, but it's kind of like the expectation of nurses, especially the experienced ones. When they get hired, they always ask, what's the ratio? Oh, the maximum is 4. So I've never heard of an ER that goes beyond that. But, you know, so probably with the ratios, the question is, do we need union to promote safe staffing ratio? What about the other states that don't have a union law that protects the employees? How can they protect that safe ratio? So I think the safe ratios go beyond whether you're union or not union. I think this is should be a national mandate. You know what I mean? All over the US, regardless if the state has a union law or not. Because I think safe ratio is one of those key indicators for high quality patient care. I mean, if you think about all our experiences, Kay, Marvin, we've been in nursing for years, right? We've been here for more than a decade, almost 2 decades, probably. It's really hard to take care of patients when you have too much stuff to do, but the level of acuity of patients are high. So yes. I think at the very least, we should have a national mandated minimum safe patient ratios, right? Agree? Yes. Agree with that?
I have to agree, definitely.
See, there is actually a bill that's being submitted by our big nursing organization about this, like, you know, minimum safe, because I agree with you that it should be across all the board, not states, but state. If you look into really our NCLEX system is not state by state. It is centralized because nursing practice, nursing education is same across all the board. And I can certainly say that I only took one NCLEX. Even if you're from California, we're going to be taking the same NCLEX. You from Texas, you're going to be taking the same NCLEX exam. So why it's safer, you know, why is it safer there and not safer here, right? So there's a question that why do we have different standards when it comes to care? You know, we all agree that NCLEX has to be done. NCLEX exam, it's an exam to protect the people, to protect the consumer. And if you're not protecting a consumer in a second way around, I think you're doing the counter act, you know, the counter of what NCLEX is for. NCLEX is there to protect the consumer. If we're not putting safe staffing, then we are counterintuitive when it comes to providing safe care. So what for, right?
I should, it's not only like a U.S. mandate, but a global mandate. Because if you remember in the Philippines, like what's the ratio between, especially if you're a community health nurse, like 1:35,000. And what's more is it, when I used to be an ED nurse, it's like 1 to the entire ward. And I only have like a midwife and like, yeah, there's like 2 nurses out of like 80, minimum 80 patients per shift. So that's kind of sad. And unfortunately, it's putting your risk of losing your license and not providing or killing someone and not providing quality care. So I think if NCLEX is national but nursing is universal. So I hope we already know the evidence about safe patient ratio and safe patient care. So I hope that it will be a global mandate, not only just for in the US, but if the ICN and other international nursing organization can actually put like pressure to Department of Health or other health departments of every country to please to put ratio and safe patient ratio, especially for taking care of patients and at the same time for whatever is in the capacity of the nurse in an ethical and within the labor included means. So labor, like fair means. So I hope it will be an international mandate now, not just like in the US. Hopefully.
Marvin and Kay, this had always been something that I've been following from the National Nurses United. And this is like template after California law, right? The California safe staffing ratio. It is being proposed here that if operating room should be 1-to-1, this is, should be a national mandate. I know some hospitals are already practicing this, but like I said, unless it is a law, that can always be bent because that is just an agreement, right? So right now, for example, in Texas, OR nurses are 1:1, right? Mm-hmm. But that is not a law, which means they can flip it tomorrow and say, you know what, we're short staff, you're going to take 2. You know what I mean? They can always change it. But if it's a national law, then they could not change that, right? So trauma in ER, 1:1, you know that. Marvin, you've worked here in the ER in Texas. I would have trauma patient and another trauma patient and another non-trauma patient. And now you have 3 or 4 on top of your high acuity ICU, trauma ICU level patient. So 1:1 for LND. I know our LND folks have been clamoring for this because, in fact, LND is crazy. I would never want to be able to work that because I would not be able to like prioritize care that good because you have 2 patients, the mommy and the baby, right? So they're proposing 1:2 because it's not actually 2, that's 4 because you have a baby inside, right? And antepartum and step down units and postpartum and pediatrics should be 1:3, and then intermediate care, med surg, psych, specialty care 1:4, rehab 1:5 for rehab, right? Long stretch, but I think we should advocate for that because a lot of our immigrant nurses, Kay and Marvin, are going to rehab facilities, skilled nursing facilities. And they get what? 1 nurse for the whole floor, along with 3-4 CNAs. Well, that's an easy way to burn out a nurse and the nurse would quit. And well, baby nursery should be 1:6. I guess this is the proposal, but because of how complex US and how big it is and how many states are involved and how busy our politicians are, we kind of are not paying attention to what is really needed, right? And also there's a pushback from the big wigs, from the stakeholders who are controlling the healthcare. I'm not saying anything against the CEOs of big hospitals, but of course they always protect the interest of, it's a money-making company, so they're protecting the interest of shareholders, right? Yeah. More money for shareholders, more bonuses for them at the expense of nurses who are actually doing the job. And not only that, if you put nurses in a difficult spot, you're also inhibiting patients from receiving high quality patient care. Because how can nurses do that if you're going to overload us with so much. So I think this is where union really plays a big role. Comment?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Paul, you forgot to put there the proposed ratio for like skilled nursing facility and and other what do you call it? Other rehab facility. Because I know this is ideal, we just want this to 5, but actually the real story, based from my friends' accounts, they said that it's 1 into the entire floor or sometimes the entire building. So it's kind of sad to know that. I know we have this proposed staffing ratios, but as you will ask some of the nurses who are working in the skilled nursing facilities, NIF, nursing homes, they're always out of ratio. They always complain about the back-breaking tasks that they're going to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's unfortunate. I know it's not located. It's not actually like stated there, but yeah, we need also to help.
And this is why, Marvin and Kay, I still advocate for our nurses, particularly immigrants, if they can work in acute facilities, hospitals. Because yes, it's not perfect, but there's more, you know, regulations. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's more safety nets to protect nurses because they can always complain to CMS or JCO or OSHA if there's a problem. And at the very least, at least there's ratios that is respected, not a rule, but respected, you know what I mean? Versus a SNF or rehab facilities. Because in my honest opinion, Marvin, with the longest time that we're admins of Lefora, the nursing group that we manage, majority of those who bought out, majority of those who quit, majority of those who went through depression and had suicidal thoughts and left nursing entirely are people who worked in nursing facility. I don't think we have the training to really work in that type of environment, especially when you're new to the culture. There's language barrier, there's cultural barrier. You're the only nurse. You're going to talk to CNAs who've been there longer than you for 20 or 30 years and probably much older than you. I don't think they're gonna take, you know, you to tell them what to do or something like that. That makes it even hard for the nurse because now all the burden is with the nurse. So I don't think that's a good environment for our immigrant nurses to thrive in the first place.
Yeah. And also, Paul, to add that one. So once you came from a nursing facility or SNF, your job opportunities after that is very, I mean, the chances of getting into an acute facility is very rare because like, there are a lot of people who are from SNF. They're trying to go to the hospital. They will be asked about recent hospital experience, especially when they're in California. And then most of the California hospitals require recent acute care experience. Unfortunately, they will not be selected or given the chance to be interviewed. And no matter how skillful they are previously before working to the skills, before working to the SNF, but still, whatever is on paper, they need to follow. And unfortunately, you having SNF experience will have a lesser chance of getting a hospital job.
Right. So yeah, that's true. That's also same here in Houston, Marvin, because in Texas Med Center, I know it's very competitive. They actually look for previous hospital experience. And when we say hospital, it's hospital, you know, like acute care units, not rehab facilities, outpatient care, or stuff like that. So I prefer for our nurses to actually work in acute facilities, especially if you're new here in the U.S. Now, if you've been here for years and you want to try something else, then you are free to do so. But just remember that SNFs and facilities like that, they have lesser regulations as far as ratios, right? I know the Biden administration was doing something about that. But even then, the laws that they were trying to propose is not even satisfactory, right? Because it's still, I think on the average, nurses would still get 10 to 12 patients. That's still a lot, you know? I mean, we work in the ER, Marvin. Like, you would get these patients from senior nursing facility. Yes. They would say, oh, she had fever today. She looks like she's having pneumonia. Well, pneumonia doesn't develop in 2 hours. It's been there for days. You know, pneumonia takes a couple of days at the very least to set for the bacteria to cause inflammatory responses. So no, this fever did not start today because now the patient is septic, something like that. But I can't blame those nurses. What if they're really so busy and they have 30 patients with them That's why I say this
but,
as an
but thirty, Paul. That's 30 is very understatement.
Chill.
Yeah, 30 is understatement. Yeah,
minimal.
I had 40 patients on right. my day. Just an
no,
FYI.
I can't wrap my hand around it because if I'm the nurse, I'd be so terrified.
Yeah. So long term care and skilled nursing facility and rehab facility are different. So just for people's Earth, different setup, different acuity.
Sure, yep.
We have facilities are, you know, we get more load in there. And I was given 40 patients on my second day. So we're not even talking about ratio. We're also talking about, are there enough training that's being done for these nurses coming here? A lot of our immigrant nurses come here being promised that they will be trained because the marketing says, we accept no experienced nurses.
True.
Right? No experience. This is your first time coming in here. And they're being promised, we're going to train you. And apparently upon arrival, they're only getting like half day orientation. For me, it was a half day orientation. Second day, I was already by myself with 40 patients in a facility. And there is just no way for me to be able to deliver that safe care.
Right.
First, this is a new country. I don't know how it's done here. And I really rely on the support of those educators or leadership who will give me a good orientation. But there's no orientation. Again, half-day orientation from a new country is not safe. Third-day, fourth-day orientation is still, you're only probably halfway there of understanding U.S. healthcare system. And the sad part there, Paul, is a lot of our immigrant nurses who would arrive and land on these facilities, they're being told you have to follow, and this is what we do here, which is the same thing that happened to me. Is this is the exact line, this is how we do it here. And then what will happen? This is how we do it here. And then even if I'm there 1 year after, 2 years after, new people will come, and that's the same thing that I will pass on to those next generation. This is how we do it here. Next generation, this is how we do it here. Again, 10 years after, this is still what we do it here, right? Because there was no correction or correction on those information. So that's why we're here, BNP and LOC, letting you know that there are states with safe staffing ratio and are things you can do to protect yourself from that, because we've been hearing 1 to 70 or 1 to 90 patient with trach.
Yes.
1 to 90 patient, and administrators have been telling, "Oh, I thought you guys can manage this because you guys from the Philippines. You guys were told that you guys can handle this." So I'm correcting. If you're in LinkedIn and you're in leadership and you're listening to this, I want you to pay attention that we do high load of nursing care or racial group because of team nursing, but not in the U.S. It's not. Also, I want to emphasize there that a lot of leadership in these facilities are saying, "Oh, the patients are sleeping at night. You don't worry about it. You can have 1 to 80 patients." I cannot.
No.
Right? Because it's evening. Patients are asleep. Well, evening shift starts at 7 o'clock.
Yeah. Most of the halls usually at night.
Yeah, sure. 1 to 4, 1 to 5, but one, you know, from 7, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and you have elderly who have dementia or walking around, it's a high risk for fall. And this and it's very unsafe. So, but anyway, going back, why we need ratios on these facilities, because I think the vulnerability of these immigrant nurses that will come here and land those jobs, or new nurses that will land those jobs, they don't know what is the right thing to do. And they don't have the voice, they don't have the knowledge and confidence to advocate for their own selves. And so it's really...
Right. That's really, you know, unfortunate for some of our nurses to go through this. Peter just joined us in the conversation today and he said, 1 to 40 from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. I cannot... wrap my head around it. I know this is why we need union, right? In Texas, we don't have union, but we at least have safe harbor, which means, we don't have union, but if you give me something that's more than what I can do, or more than what I can handle, I can file a safe harbor to the board. And the leadership needs to do something about that. Otherwise, if something were to happen, the nurse will not be liable because the nurse filed for safe harbor, which means I will not be liable for this assignment if something were to happen. So it's kind of like, okay, we don't have union, but we have this. But yeah, we're only talking about two, three states here. We're only talking about New York, California, Texas, three of the biggest states, right? Three of the biggest nursing employers as well. What about the small states? What about our peers in Iowa? What about our peers in Kansas, in North Dakota, right? What about our peers in Alabama? We don't know if there's protection for these nurses. Now, here's the big question, Marvin and Kay. We talked about the benefits of union. My question now is, can you discuss any challenges or downsides that nurses may face in unionized workplaces versus non-union workplaces? Let's start with Marvin.
One of the, shall I say, challenges would be the payment, the juice. So every 2 weeks, we need to pay. Here, we only pay like $60. But other unions will ask you for exorbitant amount of fees, but they do little in terms of advocacy. So I heard that one of the union here is actually asking you to pay like more than $100 every 2 weeks, which is actually big amount of money compared to us. Like, it's only like $60. So aside from that, another challenge that we face is that it's not all members support all collective actions. During strike, unfortunately, some nurses will still cross the line because, like, we totally understand, maybe because like they need the money, because like during strike, sometimes you are not paid during the strike days, unfortunately. But the hospital are paying the scab nurses, we term them scab nurses, the one who is actually being our replacement, exorbitant amount of fees, including hotel, flights, and everything, just to continue the hospital operations. That's unfortunate. So one of those, even though we try to explain it to the members, like, hey, we need your vote, we need your support, we need everything, we're doing this for every nurse here. Unfortunately, not all members will support. Some of them will cross the line, and then the picket line. And also, I cannot also blame the scab nurses because it's money. It's big money. So say, for example, I heard from one of the nurses who actually like serve during our strike days, they were paid quote and unquote 20,000 to 30,000 within 1 week for only working for 6 days. So, and plus they have free hotels, free shuttle buses, free, sometimes they were given free food. So that's unfortunate though. And I think those are the challenges that we face as a union, which includes the fees and then not all supporting members and the presence of scab nurses as our replacements.
All right. And Marvin, what do you mean by, like, let's clarify that. I think we got dropped. When you say I'm crossing the picket line, what does that mean for our audience?
Oh, so when we set a date for strike, so as much as possible, all our members should support our cause. Like, we go to the picket line, we do our placards and everything. We don't want to work because we want the management to know these are our demands, these are our needs for patient care. We need to hear our voice. But some of the nurses, no matter how good the explanation would be, will still work. And we term it as crossing the picket line. So they usually go to another entrance and they will still work because, like, once you are on a strike, you are not paid. So you will not be paid. So I guess we totally understand that they need the money, they need a budget for that, and it costs them more if they won't work because, again, some of the benefits will cut during the strike days. So.
Right.
So unfortunately, no matter how solid, like 95% voted for a strike, there are still some few nurses who will still going to work no matter what their reason, and I totally understand that.
Right. So that kind of is a little disappointing, right? Because you're fighting for something. You're fighting for probably patient ratios, higher salary, or protection for nurses. And then you see your coworker crossing that strike and then working, right? So that kind of defeats the purpose, because you want to be in a strong unison to say, this is our message. We're not going to work until this is changed, right? Yeah. So, but I mean, like you said, there probably are personal reasons. It's a very, very, the line is blurred as to whether you should do this or not. So there are probably people that are doing that because they needed the money. So, which is totally understandable as well. It's difficult. It's difficult because my thinking is, why do nurses have to go through this just to tell the administrators that, hey, this is what we need? You know, sometimes leadership, I'm not vilifying everybody. I've worked with some of the amazing leaders as well that are very empathic, you know, and very protecting the employees. But some of the leaders are so out of touch of reality that they don't know what's happening in the front lines, right? It's all about what we can see in data, in numbers, in research collectively.
How much they can save, how much they can actually, what's the profit.
Everything is about numbers, But we are nurses, we're humans, we're capable of feeling for our patients. We get disappointed when we're not able to provide that quality care for our patients. So I hope our leaders would pay more attention to the safety, to the well-being of our nurses, because if we keep doing this and not pay attention to the well-being of our nurses, we're going to lose more nurses. There's already a shortage everywhere. It's even going to get more exacerbated or worse because we're not paying attention. Yep. So this is probably why we need a union all over the U.S. Now, Marvin, one of the things that Kay highlighted earlier is there are some inefficient team members that may not be, you know, it's hard to complain about them, hard to write them up, because union will protect them. What do you say about that? I think Kay is back in the backstage right now.
Yeah, so I have to agree with that one, because, and also about seniority. So some of our seniors are great, to be honest, but some, you know, I mean, we work with other seniors who are like jaded already or burnout, and then some of them are still having this workplace incivility. Now, again, one of the challenges of being a union is they will try to protect the worker, no matter how worse they are, how bad they are. They follow the due process. They have to make sure both sides are being heard, evidence are all being presented to the table. No matter, I mean, let's face it, there's always one rotten apple in a bag, but as much as possible, we want to remove that apple, the bad apple, before it ruins the entire batch. So yes, the union is trying to protect that bad apple by their rights, by due process, by this process, by investigatory process. So again, it may be pros and cons. Pros for those people who are working so hard, honest, and an inspiration for those younger generations. But it would be, you know, as what my other coworker is saying, it would be a cancer that will start metastasize and then ruin the work, ruin healthy working environment. So I have to agree with Kay with regards to that. And if it, I mean, if I'm going to say it, yes, it happens. It does happen.
Right. And Kay, welcome back. And we love the background sound. We are talking I wish we were there in the lake with you. But we are talking about the caveats, the challenges with union workplaces versus non-union workplaces. Marvin talked about some nurses crossing the picket line because they needed money, which is a little disappointing, but also understandable because they need money, right? They probably need the finances. But also we've highlighted the difficulty to report and do something about inefficient nurses or nurses that are incivil, making the workplace environment a little toxic. And we've known this. We've worked as nurses. There's so much emotions on the table that people can blur the lines between being professional and unprofessional because we put in so much emotion. Nursing is a very emotional job. I've been saying this. Because you can't avoid getting your emotions involved. You're caring for humans. You know, these people have emotions. And whether you admit it or not, you absorb those energy. I always say, whenever I work in the hospital, I'm tired, not because I'm tired physically or mentally, but I'm tired because I probably absorbed the bad energy of, you know, people are sick. But that's what I do. You know, I can take care of them so they can feel better. But you also carry that burden. So that becomes difficult to get rid of people that are inefficient or not a good coworker. What about you, Kay? What else can you add to that?
So union has impacted me in many ways. The first one was I mentioned to you when I was a charge nurse that we have just an associate who's not really meeting the expectations, despite how much we teach that person. Mm-hmm. We gave so much time. We gave 3 months, 4 months orientation, and still not catching and up to the par of expectation. There's a challenge there on the management side. Mm-hmm. Even though I wasn't part of the hiring and management that time, I was just a charge nurse and team lead. It was really, a lot of justifications that I have to do despite the initial incident that we already had. Sorry, you can hear some ducks flying around me. So that one was a challenging part, I think, in the management part and the leadership team. However, we were able to resolve it. Only took us more than months. I mean, a month or 2 months to really move forward. So imagine having unsafe staff during 1 month. So I'm really scared of my license as a team lead for that. The other part where things, it helped me in a way, was when I did my resignation in a union hospital. And after 3 months that I was not there anymore, I got a call from the union and said, "Hey, you know what? You got reported by your director for AWOL." And I'm like, "AWOL? Absence without leave? I did resign and I followed the protocol and process of resignation, which is I submitted my resignation paper. I went through security. I went to HR. I submitted and I had a clearance. And I said, if you have an AWOL nurse that is out of work for 3 months, why are you calling 3 months again, right? So there was a little weird thing. So I was told that there was a do not hire thing that was put on my file by a management person. And when I called the union about it and I said, no, I have evidences that I did do my part as an ethical professional. I followed the process of resignation. So eventually that note on my end was cleared up because union stood for me and I showed evidences for that. But if there was no union, it probably would be hard for me to remove that unfair note on my end when I did my best. It was just, I think, a political act, in my opinion, by somebody who's doing a power trip. So eventually I went back. I was rehired as a traveling nurse in that facility. So I'm like, I don't know where was that coming from. It just hit me like months way far already. I said, if union did not call me, I would not have known that was on my note. So, and it was corrected. So that was a good part. Now, when it comes to the challenges of it, I think union works best on those places that where nurses are mostly exploited and these nurses have no power to protect themselves or advocate for themselves. Or we call them vulnerable population.
True.
So majority of these people are coming to those places where they are alone and they don't have enough resources.
I think they was talking about, union works best for those nurses that are in vulnerable positions, right? For example, there are in states where they're overloaded with patients. I've heard some, for example, Marvin telemetry or MedSearch getting 8 or 10 patients. I think that's totally unacceptable. So probably something like that. Some certain states don't have much to offer for nurses. Like I said, Texas don't have union, but we have Safe Harbor. Many states don't have that. They don't have union. They don't have Safe Harbor. They don't have ways for nurses to report if they are being put on a tight spot that can make them lose their license or perform acts that could be flagged as negligent just because they were overloaded with patients. And we're only talking about safe nursing patient ratios. We're still not talking about quality care, right? Are we meeting the outcomes? And I think Kay just came back.
Sorry about that. I think I'm getting kicked out. It's probably saying, don't speak anymore.
Welcome back, Kay.
Welcome back, Kay.
Thank you. So I was going to say, those are where nurses are mostly vulnerable, are those locations where they are feeling alone and nobody's watching after them. Those are called nursing facilities, rehab facilities. And actually, a rising trend right now is home care nurses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody's watching them. They feel alone. They don't have the right resources when they are not treated well or fairly by their employers.
Mm-hmm.
Travel nurses, right? We have a lot of problem with travel nurses not being compensated well or being taken advantage of employers and recruiters or non-payment of wages. That's where I think union can help. Otherwise, I think if it's a goodly or properly managed facilities or properly managed hospitals, I think union comes with a little bit of a kind of fallback on that or like a little disadvantage. But if a place hires an awful management, I think that's where union can come in and play. But for me, I would consider union not a straightforward one shot applicable to everyone. It's the same thing with safe staffing ratio. If there are like safe staffing guidelines, like you said, Paul, in Texas, right? If this hospital adapts to like kind of like safe, what do you call it? Safe harbor. Yeah. If they qualify or adhere to this kind of like criteria, safe harbor, and I think it might not be, you know, well off of additional to have union. That's just my thing, just my opinion.
Yeah.
If there are criteria like safe staffing, should it be applicable to all? I would say yes, probably with exceptions. If you're not implementing safe staffing ratio, what are the things that you do to protect the patients and the nurses and the wages? How do you handle the wages of that? So I think the three aspects where Marvin mentioned earlier where union will come in is it safe staffing ratio, payment, hours, wages and benefits, and working conditions.
Yes.
So if you have no safe staffing ratio, what are the things that you do on these three aspects? Because right now I'm really into innovation, and I think a lot of good hospitals or healthcare system are adapting to innovation.
Peter said, what if there is no union and someone's being treated like that? What are we going to do?
They should know that the labor laws in their specific state. They should also know that if they have like the Board of Nursing. So, I mean, every Board of Nursing is different and unique. So say, for example, I work in Texas, you can do safe harbor. Well, if you're in a union facility, you can also do ADO, which is assignment despite objection. So if you file that, then definitely the union can actually act on that. And also you can file anonymous reports to JCO and also to
OSHA,
labor relations. This is to protect your license, because I know you studied, you waited long, hard enough to protect your license. Don't ever allow this, like out of ratio, like not being safe to practice, lose your license easy. So please, if you don't have any union, know the laws of every state, especially labor, and especially the ones that's mandated by the Board of Nursing. Then you can, if the facility is not following what is expected, then you can report it anonymously, or you can report it directly to OSHA and other labor-related agencies. So that's my advice.
You're right. And Jorley has a question, but we're going to use this as our final words of advice and encouragement. Jorley's question is actually what is going to be my question. His question is, what do you advise for all non-union nurses as an overall reminder? So that's also my final words that I would ask you, Marvin, and also Kay, if she comes back. What can you advise to our nurses who are working in non-union hospitals, and any words of encouragement?
Okay. So one of the best things about working in the United States is freedom. Freedom to choose the facility. Freedom to choose where you want to work, where you want to practice, and all those kind of sort. But what's important thing is the freedom that you will be thinking that the next day you won't have a work because of this one, the next day you'll be losing your job because of this non-safe working environment. So if there are things, if there are organizations that can actually protect you, your practice, and your patients, and promoting a good working conditions, though they may not be perfect, but if you hear good things about this particular facility, choose that one. And for those non-union, please know your rights, know your rules, especially in the Board of Nursing, especially know their rules of labor laws, and please advocate for yourself. If you think that the situation is not safe, file safe harbor, file an ADO, file a report, because again, you might be the spark that everyone needs in order to make this change. So I know most of the Filipinos, we don't want to be confrontational, but please, when you are in the US, please advocate for yourself. Protect your license, protect your long life investment, your license. So again, know your labor laws in your particular state, know the channels where you can actually like file a complaint, and then make sure that you have the right documentation and evidences for that. And most importantly, advocate for patient safety, for your RN license. So that's my advice.
Right. So I agree with Marvin. Nurses, it's important that you know your rights as an employee. You know your rights as far as providing safe patient care, and that includes safe ratios, safe workload, right? My advice is this. It's high time for nurses to really be active with the social aspects of providing care. We were always taught to We just need to stick at the bedside and provide care and focus on that. But there are bigger things in play, such as laws and regulations that have loopholes, such as how many of our healthcare organizations are corporations that are trying to make money and are for-profit organizations, which means there is a conflict of interest between shareholders and nurses that are actually providing care, because the corporation that is for profit will protect the incorporators, the shareholders, the money, the profit that they will get at the expense of nurses. So we're pulling those resources out of nurses. Now, nurses, if there is a union that is getting established in your hospital, in your state, go get involved. I could not emphasize it further. Marvin said earlier, I know some of our peers, Filipino nurses, and perhaps a lot of immigrant nurses, feel a little complacent in the sense that, no, I don't need to do that. You know, I don't need to get involved. I'm just going to stick to doing my job. But if we keep doing that, then we're not going to be able to unionize. Remember, we have to come together and collaborate, because there is power in numbers. So nurses, get yourself involved with organizations that are actually trying to protect you, and unionize when you can. I know there are different states that are trying to unionize, but without your support, if there's only 5 people that will support a union, then that will not be effective. All right. Kay, we're just giving our final word so we can conclude the show today.
Sorry about that. I think the StreamYard app was keep on shutting down. I said my Wi-Fi is good, and I am like, oh my god, I don't know. Now I just logged in. I just restarted the whole StreamYard. I'm so sorry about that. But it's all right. Again, thank you all. I guess it's best for a lot of people who has no voice. If you have no voice, always know the resources in your hands, you know, to help you. A lot of our immigrant nurses will come here without understanding what are the safe standards in the U.S. So if you have questions, always feel free to reach out to your nursing organization. Union or not, I think you should reach out to really like organization who advocate for our nurses. There's a lot of resources there. I am definitely not going to say that I am anti-leadership. I'm not anti-union. I'm not pro-union, but I am really pro-advocacy for safe care. That's for me. And I said, union or not, if you're doing the right thing to protect the patients, I think you are fine. And maybe there's no need for it, right? But if there is no safe standard that is set there to protect, it's just it's like dependent, or you're at the mercy of the leadership in front of you. I said, that's kind of like not really the safe thing. I think there should be policy and procedure or protocols that is set. And just like how we file taxes, not everyone files standardized taxation or standardized deduction. If you want to itemize, if you want to go beyond the standard deduction, go ahead. You know, the government saying, sure, you can. Fine. If you want to be exempted from the standard that we set, but provide evidences that will support it. It's the same thing with safe staffing ratio. You cannot provide a proper standard, you cannot adapt to the minimum standard, then show us your evidence that you are proving that you would provide safe quality or safe and quality care for the patient. So for me, union or not, what matters most is there a guideline or a set standard that your facility is using to protect the patients? If the answer is no, then yes, you need to find resources out there. And thank you so much, everyone, for sharing this, because very important. A lot of our immigrant nurses come here, have no idea. If you go to other countries, Canada have their own bargaining organization. UK has their own bargaining organization, right? The Royal Nursing in UK. And there's a lot of, I would say, advanced countries that have organization that is pushing for safe and quality care. If you're not here in the United States, check out in your own country, what do you have in there? And then see and compare what we have here when you arrive.
All right. Thank you, Marvin, and thank you, Kay. So unionize, and even if you're not unionized, know your rights. Mm-hmm. Know what needs to protect you and your patients. All right. Find those regulations in place for you to be able to report if you're being abused or your patient. Mm-hmm. So nurses, it is high time that we be proactive with our own rights. All right. Thank you, Marvin. Thank you, Kay. Next week.
Thanks, Paul.
Let's look at our show next week. Episode 30. Episode 36, we're going to talk about starting a business as a nurse. We're going to have a special special guest as well. This will be next Sunday, 8 a.m. This is one of those topics that is most requested. So we're going to share our experiences as business owners, Kay, and myself, and our guest speaker for next week. Marvin, you are free to join us as well. And let's see the poster for the other shows that we're going to do this month. On the final week of June, we're going to talk about episode 36. Next week is starting a business. And on June 30, episode 37 will be about our favorite topic, EB3 retrogression update. This is going to be one of those big shows. Marvin, you're free to join as well.
Yes, of course.
So we're going to talk about the retrogression again, over and over again, but it's happening. There was a major retrogression again. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about, for those who have not attended our previous shows, what is retrogression? We're going to define that again. And that's going to be our show for this month. And also tomorrow, I'm going live on my page at Dr. Nurse Paul. There will be a free next-gen NCLEX case study tomorrow, June 17. It's morning, 7 a.m. Central Time here in U.S. There will also be one lucky winner of an NCLEX review course from AspireRN during this show. Thank you, Kay. Thank you, Marvin. Anna, we miss you.
Thank you. Thank you, Kay.
And we'll see you guys next week. Every Sunday, DNP Unlocked. Bye now.